And you look like you're ready to go for a run, Nathan.
Oh, no, this is my summer attire.
Oh, okay. No more running after you've done that marathon, you finish running.
Well, I've got another one a week on Sunday.
I just thought of something. You could do, you know, it's couch to 5K. You could do 26 miles to couch and you could do your gradual decline into unfitness.
I don't want to do it gradually. I think I do want to just stop. But it's nice. It's a nice sociable thing to do. That's what I like about it. So, yes. Less silly distances and more socialising.
You've got to run slow enough so you can chat and infuse people about family history. Because we've got to stop talking about running, so we're here to talk about family history, aren't we?
What?
So, my name's Helen Tovey. I'm editor of Family Tree. And with me is...
Nathan Ward. Hello there.
And Nathan's the designer on Family Tree and does all sorts of things behind the scenes with Family Tree. So, Nathan, how's it going with your family history?
It's going good, actually. I've been a very good boy this week. Though, having said that, it's opened up a whole world of practical questions I've got for you.
Ooh, so, speaking.
Yes. So, for my homework, I said I would finally order the death certificates of Ida Nelson and Margaret Nelson. Who's that's the daughter and then the wife of my favourite ancestor, George Horatio Nelson. So I've done that. I've gone to the GRO website. Is it GRO? Yes. Ordered the certificates, which I've got them. I'm very happy with. But I have to say, I found that website a little bit fiddly, a little bit faffy. Even after I'd ordered them, you got to obviously go in and put in the reference numbers from the death index. Which is fine. I quite enjoyed doing that. That was a little bit of sleuthing. So I went on Ancestry, found the death index, found the numbers related to their name. Then you go to the GRO website and I put those numbers and letters in and they're obviously their details. And it brings up the entry and you can buy it. And there were £3 each for a digital copy. And then once you've bought it, it sends you an email saying it's there. And then you go into your account and there's nothing there. And you've got to enter a date range where you've bought these things. It just seemed a bit fiddly. I'm not really moaning. I'm just saying it's not straightforward. But I've done it. And yeah, so I have found out, it's all really sad stuff, that Margaret died of...
Let me guess what she died. Did she die of phthisis or something like that?
No, it was...
Did she die of something, of congestion of something?
It was eclampsia.
Oh. Is that the mum died of eclampsia?
Yeah, so she was pregnant.
Oh, how sad.
You'd already speculated on that, didn't you, before? So she was 40 years old and died.
Yeah, that is sad. Very sad.
Which is rubbish.
Yeah. And that's just one of those things where you have to kind of keep looking for the... It's a perfect example. They're always perfect examples of not scooting past the records. Okay, you've got her date of death, but her cause of death gives you a whole insight into the family, doesn't it? So she would have been in the late stages of pregnancy, most likely, to get preeclampsia. And so very likely, if she did have a baby... which was born at that time, its health would be in jeopardy if it was born live. So you just come, right. Although it's a sad insight, it's really useful to learn that about your family. Otherwise, you just got the date that she died when she was 40 and the fact that she died when all the other older siblings would be anticipating a new baby brother or sister coming along. It's kind of, it's super sad. It's tragic. But it's useful to know.
And so with that, obviously, I've got questions then, like, how do I find out how far on the pregnancy was? Like, was that child born? Was this in childbirth? Was it? Am I being silly? Is it way before childbirth? And obviously, if that child was born, it probably wasn't living, so it probably doesn't have a birth certificate. Is there a way for me to find out these bits of information?
Potentially, it depends. It always depends, doesn't it? So, can you remind me what year it was that...
1910.
Okay, so when Margaret died in 1910, then stillbirths weren't recorded. So if the baby died before it was born, there will be no record of it ever having lived.
Right.
I think it was 1929 when the stillbirth register started being kept. for England and Wales, and it varies across the different countries. And we have done a very useful publication, which went to print a couple of weeks ago, and it's called Start Your Family Tree, i.e. it's aimed at beginners. But in there is a flowchart to help people find records of birth, marriages and deaths across not just England, but Wales, Scotland, Ireland and Australia, America, Canada. Really comprehensive. And it does include information about stillbirth records, because in each of the different countries, they started at different dates. I'm pretty sure for England, it was 1929. So if you'd had a stillborn baby after 1929, whichever year it was, we need to check that year, then it would have been recorded. So 1910, no. What you could potentially do is you could try and find any records of her burial to see whether those are mentioned. And it would also still be worth checking, going back to the GRO, checking the death registers, because if the baby was born live but then subsequently died, even if it's a very young baby, as long as it's born live, it will have a death record.
Right, okay.
So you'd be looking for, with Margaret's maiden name and Margaret's married name in the baby's surname space, but you don't know what the baby's called, is tricky on the GRO website. I'm pretty sure you have to search, you have to define whether the person you're searching for is male or female, so you're going to have to do that search twice.
Right.
Don't know the gender of the baby. But so I would rule out those options and put them in your research log so that you don't end up doing them again. But that's well worth finding out. I'm just looking up in this very, very organized, wonderful publication.
Yeah.
About what that official date is, to make sure it is 29 and that I haven't given any dodgy info.
It wouldn't be like you to give us dodgy info.
Wouldn't, would it? I mean, normally my info isn't categorically wrong, but normally it could do with a little bit of tweaking to get it properly accurate rather than just...
I think you're doing yourself a disservice there, Helen. I don't know what to do without you.
Do you reckon?
On her death record, it says that she died in the Royal Infirmary. So either I'm guessing that things were really bad and that had to get to her to a hospital, or she was in childbirth. But then were there a lot of home births in that sort of time period? Am I being daft again?
No, you're not being daft. It wasn't until, as far as I know, at the establishment of the NHS, so that's 1948, again, give or take a year. I'm pretty sure it's 1948 that it was established that our kind of day-to-day healthcare, and although pregnancy is such a complicated medical position to be in some ways, because it's kind of viewed as run-of-the-mill, we will all have ancestors in very recent time frames, so back in the 40s and 50s, who would be born at home. That would be perfectly reasonable and acceptable. Right. But people were increasingly, by the 40s or 50s, there were lots of hospital births, even just for regular births. So back in 1910, it gets decreasingly likely as you go back in time. So the fact she's having a birth in an infirmary, then... And the fact she's a medical condition, yeah, it's not looking...
Yeah, because it's not officially established that she's actually in childbirth. It's just, but she's definitely in hospital, so it's more likely that she was dramatically ill.
Mm. And it could be that she got eclampsia and then the baby died or she could have started going to labour. There's any number of variables. So, and hospital records are tricky as well, because lots of them have closure periods for privacy. So you could try... hospital records, and you could try local archives. So you could be trying to trace down the records of where the records of that hospital are held to see whether you can get access to them. So you're 115 years ago. So if they did survive, it's looking much more promising that you will be able to look at them. Mm-hmm. And if there were records, that could be really interesting. Well, would be fascinating. Right, I can't find the date for that stillbirth, but it's very roughly and I think in Ireland it's even later. So through the 20th century, stillbirths did get recorded, but 1910, no, you're not going to find that recorded in the baby. If the baby's born stillborn, it's not going to be recorded in a birth or death register.
Okay, cool. One other thing on this death entry, most of it makes sense to me, like. Honestly, from everything that you've taught me and showed me. But under the sex, it says female. Mm-hmm. And then under that, there's a number 138C. What's that referencing?
Oh, I've never heard of that, Nathan.
Oh, right. Interesting.
Very interesting.
It's a family history mystery.
It is. And is it written in handwriting or is it part of the form?
It's handwritten.
Handwritten. So female 138C. Pregnancy, eclampsia. So she's definitely pregnant, obviously. And she died in the Royal Infirmary, 25th September 1910. This is registered the next day. Oh, so sad, by her husband. How very, very sad.
All right, I'll get worse, I judge.
So this is interesting. While you were doing that, I did a bit of sneaky bluffing and Googling, and I Googled, what does 138C mean on a death certificate? And there's an international list of causes of death. And this was revised, the list which has popped up was revised in 1909. And 138C is defined as puerperal convulsions. Yeah? So as far as I know, puerperal means post-birth.
Wow. Okay.
Puerperal, during or relating to the period of about 6 weeks after childbirth. So she did actually give birth then. Wow. She was pregnant. She's suffering from eclampsia. Because it specifies as after childbirth, so she has given birth. She's continuing, I guess preeclampsia probably is before the baby's born. Normally you only hear of preeclampsia nowadays. Well, that's all I've ever heard of. And so it sounds as though she's given birth and she's still suffering from the eclampsia. And because they've labelled this as pregnancy eclampsia, so whether they're specifying that the condition came on while she was pregnant, but the 138C defining it as puerperal convulsions, so it's continued to affect her after she's given birth. So she's in a post-childbirth situation now and she's having fits. And that's what is precisely how she died. It's even more
so. Wow.
Yeah.
That's horrendous. And now I've got another child to find as well.
Yes.
Potentially.
Yes.
But I don't have any records of another child. So I'm guessing the child either was stillborn or died very quickly after being born.
Even if it died just a few days, you'll find it'll be in the birth and death records. But it's just if it's stillborn, you're not going to find any record there.
Okay, so I guess I've got a date range to go to because obviously this entry is the 25th of September.
Yes.
So I can look 3 months back-ish and try and find that.
Yes. Yeah, you're going to be looking around that quarter. And deaths have to be registered fairly swiftly. Like with a birth record, you have about 6 weeks that you're allowed to register it after the birth. With the death, I think you have to do it within a matter of just a few days. So you've got quite a narrow time frame to look for.
Right. That's a good thing then, I guess, for me.
Yes. And also it'd be worth, as well as looking for burial records, looking for any memorial inscriptions. Because although the state isn't keeping official records of stillborn babies at this time, from the family's point of view, and if they were in a financial position to put up a gravestone and record the names of their family members on there, that would be a very natural human thing to record the poor mum, Margaret, who died, and to record the baby. Potentially they knew what they were going to call the baby, especially if the baby lived for a day or two. They may name the baby on a gravestone, mightn't they?
Yeah. Cool. Okay.
Sad.
It's really sad. I was sad. I actually felt really nervous when I got these records. I thought, I want to know, but equally, it is going to be quite harrowing. And then, obviously, it is. And now it seems even worse. Oh, George. Oh, I know there's more to come for him as well. So, yeah. I've got lots of questions that are kind of practical ancestor questions, but shall I talk about Ida first and then we can go to practical questions?
Yeah, do Ida first.
So Ida was the 10-year-old child of George and Margaret and she died at the age of 10. So I also ordered her death certificate. This one I actually need help on because I can't read the handwriting. So the cause of death, I don't even know what word it is.
Oh, so she died of exhaustion and general tuberculosis.
Is that what that says?
Poor little child. Yeah, she's only 10 years old.
This is horrendous as well, because she died at home and George was present at the death. It's just awful. Right. Okay.
So tuberculosis, that was just a really common disease, even until the 70s and things. Like, I was born in Ireland and I've got a great big jab mark on my arm because they would routinely vaccinate all the babies, even into the 70s, because it was so rife.
I think I've got a TB jab.
You got one too, yeah. Apparently not. This could be interesting if anyone, any listeners, have any views on this, but what my mum told me is that if you got born in some areas, it was more prevalent than others. And it tended to be if you were born in kind of more deprived areas, it was more prevalent and you're more likely to get jabbed. And I got jabbed.
Right.
Hmm.
Oh, quite depressing. Let's go to talk about ancestry. So I've got all this information. First is my first question is kind of a good practice question. So I've obviously gone and paid for these images, which are now my sources. So I've gone onto my research log, good boy, and written down so-and-so's death, information from death certificate, bought on GRO website, etc. So I've logged that. Is it frowned upon for me to put that JPEG onto Ancestry because I've bought it somewhere else? Is it like me giving something for free that I shouldn't be giving away? Am I not allowed to do that?
Well, you know, I think this is a really complicated area, and it's something which has grown up in a kind of an unanticipated way, and how each individual family historian deals with it is entirely up to them, and there are lots and lots of grey areas. So yes, I think you're correct to be considering, when you're uploading a document that you've paid for somewhere else, that presumably you've agreed to the terms and conditions on a different website, and you're considering, is it okay to go and upload it elsewhere? And so for every single record type from every single different archive and record collection, or even every single record or copy of a record that you make from a family member, there's going to be different terms of use which are legal and acceptable. So that's a big broad brush answer. So when it comes to the GRO, there are two kind of basic things. One is that facts can't be copyrighted. So if you're going to transcribe the details out of death register entries, those death certificates, that's completely uncopyrightable because that's just facts on that form. Theoretically, the GRO could say that those images are their digitized copyright, and they're going to hang on to it. But I do know about 20 years ago, when it changed from Her Majesty's Stationery Office to something else, then they just became a lot more lax about whether people could record, could use images of certificates. So in this instance, I'd say just add it. You've done the good kind of best practice thing that you added the source, which is what we all need from the family history point of view. And you will expect, if you add an image onto Ancestry, other people are going to copy it. And as long as you're fine with that, then do accept that. So I think in this instance, you'd be fine to add the death certificates, because the GRO isn't that fussy about it. They don't mind people doing that. But for instance, my grandfather's, the grandfather I talked about in the last podcast, who was a prisoner of war, my granny gave his flying log books to the Imperial War Museum. The Imperial War Museum hold them, and unless I pay, I'm not allowed to use those images anywhere else, even though they're my grandma's logbooks that my granny gave to the Imperial War Museum, because those are just the terms. So if you paid for images from the National Archives, then often it will tell you exactly what your usage is. It'll be for your personal use. So it depends how that personal use is defined. So if you go, there's images on Wikipedia, which the Imperial War Museum, back to them, they've put up. You could take one of those images from the from Wikipedia, which the Imperial War Museum had digitized. You could go and put it on your blog, completely fine. You could add it to your Ancestry account, completely fine. But as a Family Tree magazine editor, I can't take that image and use it in the magazine because the precise license is for non-commercial use. Yeah?
Roger that, yep.
So if you're going to make any money out of it, you can't use the image. So because you're just a family historian doing your family history in this with this hat on, then you can use those images. Oh, okay. Very tiring, isn't it? So it is a case of reading the small print. But most people, to be honest, in my experience, don't seem to worry about that. Because, for instance, you could argue images you got from Scotland's people, would they be delighted about you downloading it and then uploading it to your ancestry tree? Probably not. But I don't know. It's tricky.
Mm. Well, I'm glad I asked. It does seem like a bit of a grey area. So
yes, it is. There's so many variables.
Mm-hmm. I was like, obviously, getting my head into the whole good research and good practice sort of idea and making sure I was logging it. But then I was like, well, obviously, when you click on like a death within Ancestry and it does the little lines and links to the documents that you've found this information from, it's like, well, I found this from a source that's not in Ancestry.
Mm.
Should it be there? But you just thought, oh, that's cool. My next question.
I think you should add them. Because to be rude, it's for your own for your own personal benefit, and you like things being complete. You're going to forget about things, and you're going to get in a muddle otherwise.
Mm.
And no one is actually going to care in this instance. That's my.
Yeah. Well, following on from that, because before, obviously, now you've given me that answer, but before I got to that point, I went in and I thought, right, I need to log where this information has come from. So I went onto Margaret's thingamajig profile and I added an event.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, I added a note or a fact, whatever. And so I put on thing, death recorded, cause of death. I basically just wanted to put the cause of death in there.
Mm.
So it was logged, and then I put found on whatever website. So I click save. I don't know where that's gone. So my question is, where does it save your facts?
I think they should be in your timeline.
So have I maybe done it very, very wrong? Because if I double click on her death, it just gives me facts based on the ancestry stuff. Let me do it live now as we do it. So clicking add a fact, add a death, date of death, 25th September. 1910, city, Apperley Bridge. So I'm typing in, she died from pregnancy in eclampsia. So I've put this information in. Now I have already put this information once already and I don't know where it's gone. So let's just see what happens. I'm going to click add and it doesn't seem to appear anywhere. But I know now I've typed that in twice.
Hmm.
So it's not me being daft. It's just been...
No. Can you click the drop-down filter at the top?
Which one?
So go up to the top of the timeline.
Mm.
And then click that. That's fine.
Alternate fact. Ooh, maybe that's what it is.
There we go.
There, right. Okay, so.
So now you need to delete one of them.
Yeah.
And then it's because it's viewing it as an alternate death. So what you could do, rather than have it as a separate death entry, because it's not really alternate death, it's just further information about that death. You could include that in the description. You could just put died from pregnancy, eclampsia, and you could.
So I can edit the death.
Yes. Yeah. So.
Right. So that works out better than a fact. That's the better practice.
Yeah. You're going to make this fact as full as possible. You're going to have your source on it. And your first source would be your death register entry. And then because you've already had the brain ache of wondering what 138C is, and that's been defined as puerperal convulsions, then you're going to write that down as well, because that's all part of, even though this isn't actually in your research log, you're still recording your research, which is what you want to do to save yourself doing it all over again in 2 days' time. Yeah.
Yes. Brilliant. So I was basically duplicating things. So I guess adding a fact, even though when you click add a fact, it does give you the option to add a birth, marriage and death. Those reasons are there because you might not have a link naturally in Ancestry to create that.
Yes.
Whereas I've gone in and obviously I have a death already. Just duplicate the event.
Mm.
So I was making my whole
I would say she's only going to have one death event. So you, I would want to only have one death event in her timeline and just make that as comprehensive as possible.
Brilliant.
So and there'll be other sort of events where she might have multiple of them, like marriages, for instance. And in her timeline, she's going to have one marriage and then hopefully she's not going to have two going at the same time. And so they will, in the timeline, this second marriage will happen later on and you'll want to have all the facts and information and sources and things relevant to that marriage later on in the timeline.
Yeah, I like this. This is good. This is the start of me adding notes. I can feel it happening now. So
yeah,
I like it.
Well, I've got a game actually now. You want to do a game?
Okay, sounds interesting.
Yeah, well, I've been getting very inspired about AI, and I'm a bit of a dinosaur about anything, and so part of me thinks, it's just cheating. Using AI and part of me thinks, how can you know that it's accurate and everything else? But I have been using it for a while as kind of a bit of an assistant to help me keep organised, so that I'm used to that bit. But the idea of actually using it for my family history to try and make me be better at family history is a new one on me. So I got it to sign me a new research log the other day. That was fantastic, really detailed. Took me through from planning right through to writing it up at the end, gave me all a little template to fill in. Really nice.
Wow.
And then, this is where the game comes in. I thought, well, I'm going to ask them about you, Nathan. So, just as like a thing, I think, because I'm inspired and enthused about AI now, I thought, what's a big deal about AI and what can it offer over and above just Googling stuff? And so, this is my little example. So, I went to Google and I just shoved into Google a great big long sentence, like the sort of thing that you might ask ChatGPT. And so it says, my friends started their family history. They've used BMDs and census records to begin. And I've said they've got back to their two times great grandparents. They've taken a DNA test at Ancestry. What can you advise them to do next to continue to research their family history? So I asked Google this, and Google came up with an Ancestry support article on finding biological family. An Ancestry support article on unexpected DNA matches, an Ancestry support article on unexpected ancestral regions. So Ancestry's got fantastic Google presence in the search results, and eventually you get down to something from Find My Past. Anyway, it's very generic answers, nothing specific to you. So then I pasted that sentence about my friend, which is you, Nathan, into ChatGPT. But I haven't pressed go because I thought it'd be fun for me and you to do a live test. So this is what I put in ChatGPT on a free account. My friend started their family history. They've used BMDs and census records to begin building their family tree and have got back to their two times great grandparents. They've taken a DNA test at Ancestry. What can you advise them to do next to continue to research their family history? So that's the beauty of ChatGPT. You can talk to it like a human, ironically. Anyway, so should we press go and see what it's like?
We can, yes, let's do it.
Can you see my screen?
I cannot.
Okay, well, you need to see it because that's more fun, isn't it? Share. Now you can see my screen.
I can indeed, yep.
Okay, so we're pressing go. Let's see how quickly it can help us. Go. And it's zipping away, coming up with an answer. So ChatGPT says, great, you've made solid progress using traditional records and DNA. Here's a structured next step plan. Does that sound appealing to you, Nathan?
Yeah, you know me, I like a good bit of structure.
Exactly. To help your friend, that's you, continue their family history journey. So they want you to review and confirm what you've done already. They want you to make the most of your Ancestry DNA test. How does that sound?
You know me and DNA. Yes, I do need to do that.
And actually, so within these steps, they've actually broken it down a bit. And what they've broken it down to is things just that Karen recommended to you a few weeks ago. Link your DNA to your tree. I think you did that, didn't you?
I did that live, yep.
Brilliant. And then sort your matches into groups. Sounds so easy, doesn't it? Yeah?
Yes.
And yes. I think, did you start doing that at all?
No, I don't really understand clustering, so I think we might need a session on that at some point.
It says focus on your fourth cousins and closer. Can you remember why you need to focus on the...
Yeah, that's to do with the... I was going to say midichlorian thing, but that's Star Wars. It's to do with... Oh my God, I forgot the name of it.
Dentimorgans.
Dentimorgans, yes, not midichlorians.
Yeah. Mm. You've got workable size segments of DNA that aren't going to...
No lower than 30.
Yes, yes. and use yes. notes and custom groups. Oh, then it's saying something, go beyond ancestry records.
Oh, this is what you've been saying. Parish register, wills and probate, newspapers and military records.
And interestingly, though, I mean, she does have a pretty good selection of parish registers. Farmer Past is fantastic for parish registers because you've got local family, like they're very much based in one area, then you checking out what your local family history society's got would be really well worthwhile because you're not going to need to have a scatter. Like me, I've got ancestors in so many different counties all over the place. I'd need multiple family history societies, which isn't necessarily a problem. But for you, you could get a lot out of finding out about your local family history society.
Okay.
Yeah, and ancestry has lots of military records. So it does actually have a lot of the records that ChatGPT is saying go beyond, but it also is definitely worth going beyond as well. Ooh, join genealogy communities. Do you feel brave enough to do that?
No.
No. Okay, fair enough.
I think I will do. I think when they get to a point, this might sound daft, but I feel like I want to get to a natural point where I'm either stuck or have to focus on one thing continuously, then want to be sharing with people.
Mm.
Is that weird? I don't know. That's just how my mind works.
Everybody's the role that family history plays in their life and what they make of it and how they work with it and how far and to what extent and in what way they relate to other people and communicate with other people about what they're doing is entirely up to you.
I think for me, it's the satisfaction of the find. It's like I enjoy that part of it. And I feel asking other people is a bit lazy if it is something that's attainable. So if it's just a record I've not yet found on Ancestry that I actually know I can do if I dedicate the time, I'd rather like get to the point where I've done all that and then I'm stuck and like, oh, I'm searching for Terry's, whoever Terry is, X, Y, and Z, and then there's no obvious thing. And then I think in my head, that's where I want to start sharing and talking to other people and then obviously looking at DNA matches and all that sort of stuff. I'm trying not to be rigid. My mindset does get quite rigid, but I'm trying to just live in the grey a little bit.
No. And also, family historians are such friendly people. And it is that puzzle factor. So that if you say, oh, I can't find this, other people just want to help you because it's just how family historians' minds work. I bet you will already have that with other people. If somebody is just starting their family history and you've got a few months advantage on them and they said they didn't know something, you'd be like, allow me, let me show you, let me find it for you. And it's really hard not to just take over entirely.
Yeah. Check out my info skills. Yeah.
Yeah. And just the satisfaction, the soothing satisfaction. So the last point on ChatGPT's plan, which is something I really love, it said set a goal or a question. And it said, encourage you to pick a goal such as, can I find out where the Smith family lived before 1800? Or is there any truth to the family story about Irish ancestry? Or can I use DNA to confirm the identity of my 3x great-grandfather? And I think that's really helpful. Like, you've got the goal at the moment that you're very much concentrating on George Horatio's line, and you're very much concentrating on the kind of the spread of the branches out to your 2x great-grandparents, aren't you, to really build them up and try and collect as many people, many records, information as possible. So you've got a nice goal. But once you feel that you've got to a level that you feel that's enough information for the moment, or it could be that something particularly captures your imagination, having a specific goal or question is really, really helpful to help the research sessions that you do feel constructive and be constructive, not just feel constructive.
Definitely. I mean, that's obviously, I've touched on it before, but you can get overloaded quite quickly, can't you? And it is nice to have a little goal. So I'm trying to put the George Horatio section to bed a little bit, just so I can then look at the other branches because I'm neglecting everybody else. I was looking at this on my tree. George Horatio is it second great-grandparent? And I've got like 2x back from that already. Yeah, I've come back to the future a little bit and I'm looking at them so much. It's just really interesting. It's like, wow, this is just so expansive. There's so much to take in. So yeah, a goal is really good. I actually, this is daft and I know this is daft, but this morning I decided that, so I'm not a Viking, fine, whatever. I am a Viking. I've had little people tell me that I am in different ways, but I decided if I'm not a Viking, I'm going to research my family tree to the extent, this is such a stupid thing, that I could find out that I'm related to Ian Fleming.
Ah.
It's like, you know, everyone says, oh, everyone's related at some point. I've got nothing. I've got no linkage to Ian Fleming at all, other than the fact I like James Bond. Mm-hmm. And it just came into my head. I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to find out that I'm related to Ian Fleming. I don't know why. That's it.
So how are you going to go about this then, Nathan?
I'm going to lie.
You'll get found out.
No, I don't have a clue, to be honest. It was just a silly thought that entered my head. I need to get back in my tree first before I even attempt this. But once I get stuck, I think I might try that. Try and work it back from his side to me.
I think that's a really good idea. And I think if you go back far enough, you could find that you are related.
Well, that's what I thought. We're all related, and why not? And
yeah. You have to go back. I think the people say 20 generations.
And easy. I can do that.
Yes. Yes.
He says when he's like, what, four generations back, maybe five.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. How hard could it be? Okay, I like this goal. So this will be to be revisited.
It just sounds like fun, doesn't it?
Mm. Family Search do this wonderful tool, and I think they only have it live during Roots Tech, so you've missed it for this year. And you sign in to Family Search, and then you can find a list of famous people you're related to.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really good. And some of them are people from history, some of them are current day people.
Right, nice.
The way my brain works, though, I can't actually remember the famous people that I'm related to, because I'm actually not that bothered about famous people. But I did have two really, as well as telling you about the famous people you're related to, it also tells you about your distant kin that you're related to who are at Roots Tech. And so I've been lucky enough to go to Roots Tech a couple of times, and each time I've met a brand new distant kin. And the first time I went to Roots Tech, I was on my stand, working away for about 3 days on the stand. And then I just on the last day I had chance to look on my phone and find out which were my other relatives at Roots Tech. And there was this guy called Brett. And so I pinged him a message and went, hey, Brett, are you still at Roots Tech? Because I'm at Roots Tech and I think we're fifth cousins once removed or sixth cousins once removed or something like that. And he was. And he'd been standing just across the aisle from me, about 3 or 4 metres away from me for the last 3 or 4 days. So that was so exciting. And he was an elder in the LDS church. And I'm sorry if I said that story again, but it was one of my most exciting family history moments. And then last time I went to Roots Tech, which wasn't this year, then I met another lovely cousin, and we were 13th cousins. So that's bonkers, isn't it? It's just so back. Anyway, she was delightful. What was funny about her is we met on the first day of Roots Tech, and we were just chatting, and we got on really, really well. And we even looked a little bit like each other in a daft kind of way. And then we joked and said, oh, we bet we're related. And then she came back the next day and went, we are. And I was like, so it was fun. But I can't remember any of my celebrities. But next year, to find out whether you're related to Ian Fleming, you can do that. And potentially, you never might get a lucky strike. You might be in your list. That would be the easiest win. Otherwise, you're going to have to just continue with your own family history.
Mm.
Maybe you could dabble into his family history, see if there's any surnames or any places which are in common. And you can just keep a very small corner of your brain allocated to this.
Yeah.
You're not going to spend too much time on it, are you, Nathan?
No, because it sounds silly. It sounds like my brain's already overloaded with my own stuff. So,
but you never knew. It'd be great if you did end up related to him.
I could just get a t-shirt printed saying I'm related to Ian Fleming and just have done with it.
Yes. No, you'd better find out. One day you will find out how you are related to him potentially. It's not impossible. Like, it might, I'm not saying it is possible, but it's not impossible. And then you can not just say you're related to him, and you can give the precise relationship.
Yeah. I don't know why it came into my head. It was just that I think there must have been a James Bond song on the radio, and I was just like, I could be related to Ian Fleming. I like pop culture. What are you going to do?
Yes, you carry on with your pop culture. Just don't test me on it. I'm rubbish at it.
I've noticed.
Yes. We're at Christmas quizzes. You do not want to be sitting next to me.
100% no.
Man, we've been holding.
Carolyn, you move to the other end of the room.
Yeah. So, do you know what I've been doing this week?
No.
So I'm afraid it's a bit like your tank man situation. I'm sticking with Prisoner of War Man, who is my grandpa, John Hill. And so I was working away on the next article by the wonderful Graham Bandy. So in the June issue of Family Tree, Graham started doing a series of articles to help people trace our ancestors in the British Armed Forces. So that's men and women, not just in the recent periods, but back, you know, through the Victorian periods and earlier. He's covering the record collections and the different sorts of records which are helpful to learn about our ancestors' times in the military. And also he's covering lots of old photographs to help us analyse our family photos. So that's really fun too. So in the course of working on, so the first issue had just an introduction and it had information about the Royal Navy. That's fun and interesting. This next one, which we're working on now, which no one's going to get for weeks, so you just have to be patient, everybody, is about the RAF. So while I was just checking the links and making sure everything was working right. And then I had a little sneaky look to make sure that one of the links is for collection on the National Archives website for the observations record books. And so these are like the war diaries for each of the squadrons. And so I was just testing to make sure it all worked okay. And I found the war diary for the month where I don't think they're arranged precisely by month, but I found the correct month for when my grandpa got shot down. Like, it was one of those things, I was like, why have I never found this operations record book before for the actual month? I kind of read lots of other accounts. I've read my grandpa's log books. I've read other books, but I've never actually got this precise document. And so you go to the National Archives website. If you log in, not all of their records, I don't think, but or clearly not all of their records are digitized. And I don't know whether out of those that are digitized, whether they're all free to download, but certainly a lot of them, if you log in, if you don't log in, it's £3.50 typically for a kind of download for records that are digitized. If you do log in, it's completely free. So I've got this wonderful collection. You can see it's PDF, 19 pages long, of what Squadron 177 was up to in October 1944. And so I page through to the date where my grandfather set off on a flight and then didn't return because he got captured. And so we got up here in the top corner, it's 5th of October 1944. And it kind of gives me the shivers. And for each of the people who are flying, then it has, they're on ops. So it could be a test flight or it could be ops. So ops is when they're actually operational. They're not just, they're going off to do something military, yeah? And then it has time up and time down. And so by the time I got to his page, I paged through a couple of pages. And the entry before has the people who went off on an op. They set off time up at 9:30 a.m. They came back at 13:50. Attack road communications. And then they had to circle back because the weather was unfavourable. And it has information about what they did. And when they set down again, then the next line is WCJES Hill. So that's my grandpa, Wing Commander John Elliott Scott Hill, and with Flight Officer G.W. Broughton, and they're on an op, and they set off at 9:45. That's time up. The column for time down is blank, because then you read the entry over to the next in the remarks bit, and it says attack communications, and then it's got some coordinates. AC says aircraft did not return to base. Oh, it makes me shiver. No receive from it after becoming airborne, crew missing. I could almost cry. It's a crazy, crazy thing. And it's just so kind of bald and bleak, like time up, time down, it's just not there. It's just like sometimes in family history, we have information overload, and then sometimes it's the information which isn't there, which just speaks volumes. Anyway, he lived, so I don't know why I'm getting so emotional about it. He lived, it's all fine. Oh,
it's all got weight to it though, doesn't it? It's
Yeah.
And obviously this is like typed as well, so it's very like factual and
very military, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. Well, it's good that it's typed though. It makes it a lot easier to read, doesn't it?
True. Very, very true. But I mean, you really need that, because with any of these military records, they have so many abbreviations in them. I have to actually keep having to stop and think and either use my common sense or Google to kind of decode lots of the abbreviations. And if you're dealing with, for instance, so they're out in Burma, my geography of Burma's really, really rubbish. So you need to have a map to hand as well. You need lots and lots of things to help you make sense of the record. Even if it's typed, even if you can actually read the characters, it's still lots of detective work to do. So anyway, I'd really recommend two things. I recommend anybody has an ancestor in the RAF. I do find the National Archives website really hard to find. So what can be really helpful is just to put in the National Archives, go to your search bar, put in the URL, so discovery.nationalarchives.gov.uk, then have a space, then have a colon, then have a space, and then have what you want to search for. So these operations record books are in AIR space 27, so AIR space 27. That's the category that they're in the National Archives. And then I specifically searched on October 1944 177 Squadron. And then the top of the search results in Google, I get taken straight to the right place of the National Archives, because I find... Some people love the National Archives catalogue, and I feel a bit of a wimp for finding it difficult, but I do find it difficult. So I do my Google hack of that colon.
Well, if it works.
It works. So I'd recommend anyone else who finds it difficult to try my hack and go and get their ancestors and family members' operations record book. Or if you've got any other curiosity, or even just to download one at random and just have a read. And they are just... Yeah, really, really interesting.
It's cool. It's like I keep saying the phrase, but it's living history, isn't it? You're reading these logbooks, and when you were describing the planes going off, I was visualizing it in my head again, once again get caught up in SAS Rogue Heroes. But it's cool to take it from beyond the page and visualize it all and feel I don't know. Again, it's probably romanticized from films and TVs, but you see men in rooms filling these forms in because they've just seen their airplanes taking off and. Whatever it is, I like it.
And it's piecing it all together as well, isn't it? So if you know the squadron number, then you'll be able to know what kind of aircraft they were flying. So it's not just any old plane. Like, was it a massive bomber? Was it a little zippy fighter? What were they flying? So they were flying Bristol bow fighters, and then my other grandpa, they flew Catalinas, which landed on the water. So that all helps you just to kind of gain flavour and interest. And I know from that book, which I mentioned before, that so once they got given their details of the time that they were going to be taking off, quite a lot of them would just go off and be sick because it just for nerves. I mean, as a runner, even the adrenaline getting ready for a big run, it can make you physically very anxious. And so these were young men.
Yeah, terrifying. I can't even comprehend it, really. It must have been horrendous. Mm. Once you're in that cockpit, that's it. You're stuck, aren't you?
So I need to find other earlier operations record books for when to get you further information about him earlier on in the war.
So
what's things to do?
Would I be able to find this for Tank Man, or is that too far because it's World War One? Or is that war diary that I've got the only reference that I should have?
Yes. So that war diary, so they're called unit war diaries for the First World War for the army, but it's the same deal. So the only lucky thing, so this is the record book and it's got details of the flights going up and coming down. But what you're noticing is, or who you're seeing is the crew. So you're seeing the names of the air crew. So there's going to be lots of ground crew as well, but they're not mentioned there by name. So it's a bit like how in the First World War unit war diaries, you get the officers mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Then it will say Lieutenant blah, blah was killed. Lieutenant blah, blah was killed and 19 men. And if your ancestor was one of the ones who was not an officer,
they don't get
regular soldier, then not going to be named by name.
All right, cool.
It's very galling. Yeah. But it's still worth reading because you get a flavour for what the unit they were with was doing and experiencing.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I've said it before. I don't know, the one where weeks before my tank man's off to die, they're having a sports day event, and it just gives you that flavour of what life was like. Well, obviously not really what life was like, but what they were doing to entertain themselves in between, and it just paints a bigger picture, doesn't it?
So Nathan, I'm very proud of you, everything you've done this week. You're going to carry on. It sounds like we're just both going to carry on with where we're at.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I've got... I keep on trying to get off the George Horatio, but now I'm obviously going to try and see if I can find this missing baby, if I can. And I also want to research George's second wife. We've actually had a listener write in, haven't we, and say that they know a few details about Teresa. And I have, since I spent that day with my mum going through death records, she does know that he has another child that dies young. So I do have a few details on that. So I need to, I'm not going to talk about it now, but I need to dig deeper and find those details. So that'll be my task. And then I think I will try and get, you know, get back to going to further back in the timeline.
Brilliant. Yes. So we've had some really nice comments. I love it. We've had somebody who enjoys listening to us while they do their ironing, which I love. I mean, ironing, you've got to have something to help you get through the ironing, haven't you? So that's really, really sweet. And then somebody who potentially thinks they're related to you.
Later. Really?
That's exciting. Yeah. Yeah. And then somebody who is in hospital, who we wish well, and they're enjoying listening to our podcast to help take them up. Their mind off being in hospital. So it's cute. So thanks for messaging us. We really appreciate it.
It's always nice to hear, isn't it?
Yeah.
Listening to us waffle on about chocolate bars.
Yeah. So if anybody would like to get more concrete information, not just Nathan and I waffling, then the best thing you can do is to sign up to the Family Tree e-newsletter, and it is completely and utterly free, and it's really, really easy to do. So all you need to do is go to www.family-tree.co.uk/newsletter-sign-up and sign yourself up, and then once a week, it's usually on a Monday, we'll send you a lovely email with some concrete family history information. Just you'll just read it and learn there and then. And then we do a few other emails giving you other ideas or things you might want to attend. Like, we do some fantastic talks. We do some fantastic other publications. And of course, we have our monthly magazine. So I mentioned about Graham Bandy's series. So if you're keen on military history, you could grab any of the issues from the May issue onwards, because we're covering VE Day. Then we're going into the individual forces coverage later on in the year. We'll be doing VJ Day. Loads of cool and interesting things to learn about.
Yep, it's fabulous. I've just laid out the RAF article yesterday.
Have you?
I really enjoyed doing it. I'm a bit of an aeroplane geek, so I enjoy the RAF stuff. But I was just looking at it going, this is really helpful, really useful, because obviously it links to the uniforms and tells you what to look for. And that does look really helpful. I need to find a pilot in my family.
You do. Yeah. Thanks for listening then, folks.